Oh, Scott. What should I have for breakfast tomorrow?
You should have breakfast burritos.
I hate breakfast burritos. Try again.
Pancakes with strawberries in them.
There you go. Now you're talking my language.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside. A show that can leap tall bottles in a single bound. I am Scott, and with me tonight are, in no particular order, some people.
Some people? You can't even introduce us?
Okay, men that need no introduction.
Well.
Carrying on to pick of the week.
That was lame.
Ah.
I'm Jeff, also known as Jabman025.
And I'm Tony Mast, known as Tony Mast, also known as the pimp of the internet. But that's weird.
Big so pimpin'.
The man behind Sausage Fest.
Tony is also the proprietor of BackseatProducers.com, which I'm sure if you check back in a month or three, there will be a new podcast there every day of the week.
Maybe. Right now we're at 4. We were at five for a little while, but we're back to 4 per week. Things got a little busy at the home front, so my wife and I were doing Backseat Reality, and that kind of slid to the side for real life. But hey, we've talked about it. It'll probably return at some point.
Well, that, and hasn't the reality TV scene kind of died down a bit now that real TV is back for the fall?
Yeah, you know, it's the summer is really heavy on the reality stuff. So there's just a lot that you can talk about and then still miss a ton of it. But I don't know. We still watch, I guess, two or three shows a week now. Two, I guess. Survivor and Amazing Race.
I always meant to send in a voicemail to that, just to be not to report on a show, but just to explain that it existed to the public at large. That in Canada, we developed a competitive Glee Club show where amateur Glee Cubs would sort of audition, then have like a month to train with like professional vocal coaches and choreographers.
Yeah, we've got that.
And then but then they would compete for charity, but the judges were the awesomest thing because it was Jan Arden, one of the guys from Sum 41, and Vanilla Ice.
Vanilla Ice.
Is he still doing the punk metal rap thing?
I don't know what he does. He's Vanilla
I was going to say,
Ice.
What does Vanilla Ice know about anything about singing, really?
He knows about dancing. I think that's kind of maybe why.
For a Glee Club, that doesn't help much.
He knows about ripping off music.
True.
That's true.
That is an important skill in Glee Clubbery.
This is true. You got me there. Dum 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 da dum 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 dum. Sorry, what?
No. I didn't rip it off because
it's got the boom chish at the end.
My song is dum 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 da dum dum ch.
Dum dum. Yes.
It's not the same.
That ch changes everything right there.
Yeah, to the point where I still, when I hear the intro to the song, I'm like, is this going to be really good?
or really bad.
Really, really bad.
Like, I have a long-standing hatred of Puff Daddy for sampling the opening lick of Kashmir, just because every time I hear that, it's like, this could be awesome or not. What is it? I can't deal with the tension.
Yeah, there's another new one that came out within the last month or two. I get really excited. We were driving around, and I got excited and turned up the radio, and my wife kind of turned and looked at me like, what are you doing? And I can't remember what song it was now or what they were sampling, but it was one of those. It was like an 80s rock song, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. What the hell?
And this is going to be classic. This is going to be great. This is not what I thought it was.
Yeah, then my four-year-old in the back starts singing the whatever the new song is. And I turned to my wife and I was like, what have you done? What is going on here? This is no bueno.
No.
Seriously.
It's one of those sudden yet undeniable facts that you find out that, yes, you are getting old.
That is not happening. People have just gotten stupid. I'm not getting old. People are getting dumb.
Yeah. I think box office has sort of rammed that into you very hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is taught everyone who plays the game to underestimate the sensibilities of the American public over and over.
Yes, yes.
All right, on to pick of the week. I choose Jeff to go first.
My pick of the week goes to a game that I've been playing pretty much nonstop for the past 4 or 6 hours in between watching the Cardinal game. Batman Arkham City. Truthfully, I was a huge fan of the original Batman Arkham. And Arkham City, when I first got into it, when I first really started playing it, I don't know, I just couldn't get into a groove in it. The problem with the game, if there is any problem, is there's a main quest and there is close to maybe a dozen side quests. And you can really get, you know, bogged down. There's so much side quests. There's so much stuff going on. There's so many characters running around. It does overwhelm you a little bit, but once you get into the groove of this game, you do not want to put it down. I have just played it for a long, long time, and I didn't realize exactly how long I was playing, and I looked up the clock. Holy crap, it's almost time to do the podcast. So, yeah, good game. I will definitely be playing it a lot tomorrow in the next couple of days.
My pick of the week, it's got to be the World Series. I'm blanking. It's late, and I've been drinking already. So full disclosure is what I'm going for. I am from the St. Louis area. So we do have a vested interest in the World Series in so much that the St. Louis Cardinals are one of the two teams. There's been a lot of talk about Cinderella stories in sports. But if you look at like what the St. Louis Cardinals have done in the last month and a half, it's pretty incredible. They went from a month before the end of the season, they were in a position where they had to win like 10 of the next 15 games, and a lot of teams had to lose a lot of games. And they managed to make it on the last day of the season into the wild card position. They beat the best team in baseball to advance to the National League Series. Then they won, and they're in the World Series now. And the thing is, the games are real exciting. They're not any one-sided games. Now, the game we saw just earlier this evening was fairly – it was a high-scoring game, but there was some back and forth early on. It's exciting. It's interesting. Baseball is interesting. And I don't follow baseball – normally, and I'll be honest, I'm not normally a Cardinals fan, but there's something exciting about it this year, and it's a lot of fun to watch. The teams are fairly evenly matched, and the games are exciting.
Curiosity is getting the better of me. As a lifelong Cardinals fan, what are you usually a fan of?
The Phillies. I was not born in this area. I moved here when I was about 8 years old, 7, 8 years old. So my baseball training and weaning was ingrained when I lived on the East Coast. And so I'm a fan of the Phillies. And actually, I was born on the other side of the state. So I had the fortunate opportunity to actually go to some of the games of the 85 World Series when we were playing the Royals. And I was like a speck of blue in a sea of red. I was I was that guy rooting for the Royals. And they won.
No. We won't get on this rant. There's a man named Don Dechinger who gave them the World Series. That's all I'm going to go into. But they did not win. They were given the World Series. It was taken from us. They were given the World Series.
See, and this is why it's exciting. 16 years later, or 26 years later, Jesus.
Math is hard this late.
No. You said before that it's hell getting old. See, that's just it. In my mind, I'm not that old because I went to that game when I was a freshman in high school. So I'm not that old. God damn it.
Just keep telling yourself that. Reality will hit you in the face soon enough.
No.
I'm only as old as those douchebag teenagers on the bus let you feel.
Well said, sir. Well said.
And what's your pick of the week, Scott?
I'm going with a YouTube channel. It's called It's Just Some Random Guy. He is a guy who does... It started out as a parody of the Mac PC ads where he would pose action figures and have them debate the states of Marvel and DC movies. And they're honestly pretty funny just because he's exaggerating the existing Marvel and DC characters to sort of ridiculous degrees as they argue about the states of comic book movies. And then he occasionally has these characters go on crazy, wacky crossover fan fiction adventures.
That sounds delicious.
Well, for the most part, like, for a whole premise that started out of, hey, those Mac PC ads are kind of like, I'm a Marvel, I'm a DC. And he also does, like, fake movie trailers where he recasts them with, like, his little comic book action figures. So having the cast of Spider-Man recreate Harry Potter is pretty hilarious.
That's great.
Oh, the cast of Spider-Man recreating. I gotta know. Who's Voldemort?
Oh, I think it was Goblin, because I think he uses his Goblin action figure for pretty much everything. And that does transition into our main topic. See, I'm doing it. I'm working on it.
Look out.
After last time when I just kept shutting Chibi down on trying to transition, I'm working on it. We are talking about comic book movies upcoming and some things we'd like to see in the future. Okay, guys, where do we want to start? DC or Marvel?
I'm going to go ahead and throw out there. Let's start with the most recent trailer that caused some buzz.
Yeah. All right. So Avengers getting all Avengy. I'm psyched for this.
I really enjoyed the Loki character from the Thor movie, and I knew he would play a role in the Avengers, but it looks like he might be, you know, the guy in the Avengers. I was thinking they might do some Skrull things. Maybe they still are. Maybe there's something they're not showing us yet, but I'm really excited to see what they're going to do with Loki in this movie.
Well, here's the thing is that because it's Joss Whedon, you always have to wonder who he's going to kill off, and I'm like, so I was a little worried because it's like, okay, there's no way Marvel and Disney are going to let him kill off anyone cool or actually important. But
think about it. There is a character that is there.
No.
There's been rumors that he's going to be killed off.
No, but here's the thing is like, I was worried about Agent Coulson because he's like, okay, there's no canon there's no canon back in this guy. Yeah. Everyone loves him. Joss Whedon's going to have a big target on him. And then the actor came out and said, no, I'm fine. I'm surviving. Yeah. And then I'm like, okay, I don't think anyone's going to die this time. Everybody lives, Rose. Everybody lives.
I wouldn't go that far. I think somebody's going to get the axe, but the question is who. But thanks to the wonders that that is comic book continuity, nobody actually ever dies. They just, you know, go to sleep for a while.
Yeah. But yes, I think I do like Joss Whedon. I'm not a drooling fanboy for him, I think if there's one person you want to do with a superpowered ensemble cast, he's kind of a guy you'd want to pick first. And I think Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark is sort of a perfect vessel for a very specific style of Joss Whedon's comedy, where he has just one character who says exactly what he was thinking at all times.
Yep.
Yeah. And the trailer kind of proved that with the crazy Green Rage Monster line and the billionaire philanthropist line.
Yep. I did really like that line between Captain America and Iron Man. Without the suit of armor, what are you? And then that billionaire philanthropist playboy nonsense. I do look kind of like a little bit of conflict on my superhero teams. I don't want it to be, you know, super friends, Wonder Twin powers activate nonsense. There's going to be some, you know, these are because Captain America and Iron Man, even in the comic books, they really, you know, I wouldn't say they don't like each other, but they let's just say they wouldn't be hanging out on the weekends.
Yeah, they have different ideologies. They really do.
And if you saw the Captain America movie, you kind of get his ideology of, you know, the world is better when you make it better. Iron Man's is, the world is the same, just depends on what you do. But maybe I'm getting too philosophical.
No. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think this will probably turn out to be pretty good. I think, I'm looking forward to yet another person playing the Hulk. I'm sort of sad Ed Norton couldn't stick around, but apparently he was being a dick on the creative side, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, during the last Hulk movie, didn't he complain about they making it a too action-centric cut of the movie?
He basically wanted to write the movie as well as star in it. Ah. He would have.
He did a lot of rewrites for the film, too.
Yeah, and he basically wanted, if he was going to come back for Hulk 3, he would have been, like, writer, director, star, and I don't think anyone really wanted that but him. Which is a shame, because I think Ed Norton's kind of the guy you want when you have someone who has a super violent alter ego.
Yeah. But, I don't know, let's put it this way, I didn't think that Edward Norton Hulk movie was great, but boy, was it an improvement over the first one.
I like the first one.
The Scooby Doo Hulk?
See,
when you see that CG Hulk, couldn't you imagine him going, "Gee, Shaggy"?
No, just because what I loved about the Hulk was how they introduced, when they introduced the character, they introduced him in shadow. And the first 5-6 times you saw the character, you didn't see him. You saw shadows, you saw
aftermath.
Yeah. And so when you did finally get to,
like, it was a really good monster movie.
Thank you. I've been saying that since
giant monster poodles, really?
That this is the movie is formulated on the style of a classic monster movie. That it's, people kept looking for a superhero movie out of this, and it's not. It is not a superhero movie.
Like it plays like that first half of the Curious Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, where you just have this third party who seems to follow these very odd incidences around.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and jump in and say, let's transition from talking about movies that aren't really superhero movies into one of the other new movies that are coming out. That the first two, not really superhero movies, and that's Rise of the Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises, whatever the hell this movie's called. Yeah, because the first two are not superhero movies. They're not comic book movies. And especially The Dark Knight is not.
No. Nobody has superpowers in that movie.
Well, no one is especially heroic in that movie.
No, that movie, I'll freely admit, I was really, really worried. I think I talked about this when we did a Batman episode. I was really, really worried how they would do the Joker. Joker's always one of my all-time favorite comic book villains, and how are they going to do this? How are they going to fit this character into this world he's created? I don't know if they can pull this off. Boy, was I wrong. I was completely wrong. That's why when they announced Bane and Catwoman, I was like, I don't know if this is going to work, but hell, I didn't think the Joker was going to work, so I'm just going to trust him and let him run with it.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's sort of a mantra in comic book geekery now is just trust Nolan.
Yeah.
Like,
if Chris Nolan says he's got it, he's got it.
Yeah. I'm willing to just let whatever happens at this point. Nolan has earned my trust with Batman. And much the same way that Singer earned my trust with the X-Men movies. And then he wasn't in the third one. And we all know how that turned out.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
But Nolan's earned my trust. And at this point, it's just a matter of just, you know, show me the light. You know, I'm here. Where can I spend my money so that I can see your movie?
All right, I'm
to that point.
Cards on the table. I think it is going to be a very good movie. It will be better than Batman Begins, but not as good as Dark Knight.
No, you're thinking you're going for the Empire Strikes Back theory.
Oh, not even the Empire Strikes Back. I think that Dark Knight was just lightning in a bottle. Like, there's no way he can recreate that perfect casting and perfect environment again.
I am going to be the voice of dissension, at least in part, because as great as The Dark Knight was, I think that it carries with it a certain mystique because of Heath Ledger's death. I think Heath Ledger's performance, while fantastic, is still kind of overrated into what it has become.
I do love how they portrayed the Joker, but that was as much the writing as it was the acting.
Yeah.
They oversell Heath Ledger.
I don't.
Not that he wasn't awesome, but that was an equal mix. This is not.
I'm sorry, but Aaron Eckhart's performance was undershadowed.
I'll agree with that by a million miles.
He was on par and was acting toe to toe with Heath Ledger throughout that movie.
Especially because he is actually the antagonist of the film.
Right.
Yeah. Well, he's the protagonist of the film.
No. This is something at some point when there's a week where I'm sort of short on content, there will be a quickie about this. But if you start looking at sort of traditional screenplay formula, throughout the entire film, Harvey Dent is the antagonist of it. Which has to do with the fact that we'll take Batman as the protagonist.
That presumes Batman as the protagonist, though.
Well, yes. Well, this is the thing, is that the protagonist is just a character who wants something that happens to have a lot of screen time in the movie. Mm-hmm. And because all these characters are fleshed out, every character wants something. But what Batman wants, what Bruce Wayne wants, I should say, is not to eradicate crime or restore order. He wants to stop being Batman. That's what Bruce Wayne wants. And the only thing standing in the way is that Harvey Dent isn't good enough. Is that he is not quite he's not quite the White Knight that everyone makes him out to be. And that's sort of the recurring conflict for Batman, is that Harvey Dent isn't quite there enough. And that's why he's the antagonist, because he's the one thing that's standing in the way of what Bruce Wayne wants. Because at this point, Bruce Wayne is still the protagonist of these movies. I think in Dark Knight Rises, Batman will be the protagonist.
I need to review some things before I can intelligently argue with you about this. But I will.
Okay.
For a future episode.
At some point.
There will come the day.
I want to go back to something Tony said.
I'm throwing down the bat gauntlet.
Oh, the bat gauntlet. Batarang, throwing down the batarang. Anyway, I want to go back to something Tony said a bit ago about Heath Ledger's performance being overrated. I don't think it is overrated. I think it is maybe the overrated is in the right term is magnified as because of his death. I don't think it was worthy of an Oscar, but because he died, they gave it to him.
I also
agree that Aaron Eckhart did a better job in that movie than he did, just that Aaron Eckhart's still breathing. But I do think that Heath Ledger did an amazing job with that role, and in due part because of the writing and because of his acting, but I think he did an absolutely amazing job, and I don't think it gets overrated as it does get over-magnified because it was his last role.
It wasn't his last role.
Dr. Parnassus.
The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus was his final role.
Okay.
Which no one saw.
Right. So his last role that anyone actually cares about.
Fair. All right. I do have one comment about the Oscar thing. The presumption is that the Joker was a supporting character. If you look at screen time and the influence to the plot of the story, the Joker, Heath Ledger as the Joker, should have been in the lead actor position. He should have been nominated as a lead actor because he had as much, if not more, screen time than anyone else in the film. And there's no way he could have won.
Right.
He could not have competed at the – he might have been able to compete at the level of lead actor. But – and I've stated this before. His win of supporting actor is kind of like taking the varsity quarterback and putting him up in the – you know, as a nominee for the league MVP of the JV squad. You know what? This guy – He is so much better than any of the other lead actors and in those roles. But he was, or any of the other supporting actors. But to be honest, that was not a supporting acting role.
No, it was the character of the Joker exists to exemplify the conflict between Bruce Wayne and Batman, where Bruce wants to stop being Batman, and Joker just keeps saying, "No,
again, Scott,
you're a freak.
You're
like me.
You're presuming that." The Batman is the lead in the film. And that's where I think that's where the flaw of the film is. The Joker is the lead and driving force of everything that happens in the film. He's the first of the major characters that you see in the film.
Well, he's the drive of that movie, but I don't think he is the main character.
No. See, he is what screenwriters call the dynamic character who exists entirely to reinforce certain themes.
But if you also look at the way the Oscar system works, he should have been nominated as a lead actor, not as a supporting actor.
Yeah, well, the Oscar system is a little bit screwy when it comes to certain things like that. Like,
but remember
True Grit.
Yeah. Well, admit this at least: if he did live, would he? I think he might have got nominated still, but he would have no shot of winning.
No chance.
I think he would have won for supporting actor. I do.
Even if he lived?
Yes. I do.
I don't know about that.
I do believe he would have won for supporting actor because the role he played was so different and so shocking. Plus he would have had a lot of Oscar cred because of the role he had in Brokeback Mountain. And that would have carried through. As much as people say that the Oscar's based on the performance it's nominated for,
it's the whole career. They give consolation. There are consolation Oscars.
Absolutely.
It's like, weren't that good in this, but you kind of deserved it last year, so here you go.
Denzel Washington is an excellent example of that. The one movie he won an Oscar for was far from his best movie, but it was one of those cases of he deserved an Oscar a few movies ago, so who really cares?
Martin Scorsese is the same way. He deserved he probably deserved numerous Oscars, but he won it for what is definitely not his best film. It's a good movie. but it's not his best. And that's The Departed.
Yeah. Now you've got me looking at who won Best Actor, and I'm like, I don't think he actually would have won that. I don't think he would have. Even if he had lived, he would not have competed for Best Actor just because the winner was Sean Penn as Harvey Milk, which was you know,
brilliant. That was a brilliant. Well,
it was good, and it was a biopic about a cause Hollywood likes. So
you got it.
There you go. That's 3 for 3. Done. Yeah,
that's a good way to get an Oscar. Do a biopic. Do a biopic of a cause Hollywood likes,
and be good at it.
And do a good job. Shoe in.
Like there were no Nazis in the movie, but he still got by. Yeah.
But he plays out of type. I mean, I remember watching that film and watching the scene where he and James Franco kiss, and watching that scene, James Franco, it's a good actor, but he looked uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Sean Penn did not. It looked like it was just natural. Like he was kissing his spouse. Not even like another actor or actress or whatever. It looked like he was giving a loving kiss to someone who he had known for a long period of time and who this is just a natural thing for them. And that right there, it was like, oh man, if he doesn't win, there is just no justice in this system.
Yeah, but come on, when you saw the nominations for the Best Actors, like, yeah, just give Penn the award. Mm-hmm. Do we even have to do the announcement?
No.
Just let him come up the stage, read his speech, and get on with his life. Give him his little gold man, he can go back to his seat.
Okay, I guess we should talk about something somewhat less serious, and I guess the one that I don't think anyone's actually looking forward to is The Amazing Spider-Man.
I do want to see.
I'll go see it.
The only thing that so far has got me excited about that is that they got the perfect person to play Aunt May. Why she wasn't playing Aunt May in the first trilogy, I don't know.
Who is it? I'm blanking.
I'm blanking too, but she played Forrest Gump's mom in the movies.
Oh, okay. Sally Field.
Sally, yes. Thank you.
Sally Field. Okay, this is my thing, is that getting on to the casting of this movie, I am so freaking angry at these guys for picking Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy. Not because she's not a great actress, but because she is the perfect fucking Mary Jane. And now that can't happen.
No, I actually see her as better as a Gwen Stacy. And you know what I love is getting Dennis Leary as Captain Stacy.
Oh yeah, no, that is
great casting right there.
Yeah.
Because I want somebody that I can believe, and I can see him being a cop in New York. I mean, yeah. and right there, his whole career over the last, what, 5 or 6 years, being in Rescue Me.
Yeah.
And I'm there. Yeah.
There's only one person I would pick above him to be Captain Stacy.
Ooh.
Bruce Willis.
Oh no.
I think that would be almost a little bit too much stunt casting.
Yeah. Well, this movie is not immune to stunt casting, considering you've got Martin Sheen as Ben Parker.
Well, that's fine. I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that level of gravitas.
I think that's the perfect setup right there. Sally Field, Martin Sheen, Ben and May Parker. There you go. That's perfect right there. We don't need to change nothing there. The only person I'm worried about in the casting is old Garfield himself, the guy who's going to play Peter Parker.
Every time he's on screen, I stop thinking Spider-Man in 3D and start thinking this fall on the CW.
Yeah.
Now, see,
I'm concerned. That's all I'm going to say. I could be wrong. He could knock out of the park, but I'm concerned.
I saw The Social Network after I heard he was being cast as Peter Parker. And once I watched The Social Network, all my fears were alleviated. I'm like, I'm cool with this. I don't know how he can handle action, but to be fair,
the action's going to be in CG anyway.
Yeah. To be fair. Well,
actually, no, that's what's impressing me, is that they actually have dudes hanging from wires swinging around.
they have him running around in the costume. And they're going to CGI the mask over his face in some of the scenes. And you can see him, like, in, they're doing some of the stills from action scenes, and it's him.
Yeah.
That is saying a lot. That says a lot for the director. I mean, it's saying he's got balls.
Yeah.
Whether they're warranted or not, that's saying a lot.
Like, this guy is willing to go big or go home.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. He's willing to gamble is what he's willing to do.
I'm cool
with
that.
See if it pays off.
And I still don't think they needed to reboot the whole franchise, though.
Well, I don't think you could do a whole lot much more with Tobey Maguire.
Well, no, I'm not saying that you could have kept Tobey back and, you know, just done Spider-Man 4 like 3 weeks after the end of the movie. But you could just have easily said that this took place in between 1 and 2 or something.
See, the problem,
and not changed a thing.
See, the problem was Sony really, really muddied the waters with how they handled 3.
Yeah.
And I cannot in any way fault Sam Raimi.
No.
Because
everything that was wrong, he hated.
Well, and not even that. If you watch the movie, I mean, really watch the movie, and watch it a couple of times, because I've got a 9-year-old, and so at the time when the DVDs came out, we watched that movie like every day, like 2 months, just in heavy rotation, because it was a superhero movie, and it had Spider-Man and Venom, and you know, and he was just in that moment, and so we watched that movie every day for like 2 months. So I had the chance to really sit back and watch the movie over and over and over again. And one of the things that's really blatantly obvious is that the first half, at least, of the movie, almost 2/3 of the movie, is brilliant. It's really great. Until you get to the point where they ham-fist the story and push Venom into it. Because everything with Sandman is just fantastic. The setup, all of the story, the CGI, everything is
well,
just
that was the first time I cared about Sandman.
Yeah.
Ever.
And there's that scene. And I mean, it's still, I get a lump in my throat watching the scene where he first turns into Sandman and he's trying to hold on to his locket, the locket that is, of his daughter, and he can't because it just keeps slipping through his fingers because his hands are made of sand now. That scene and just the way he's clutching and grasping at it, and it's like, man, that you can just feel the pain in that guy and what he's willing to go through. So you really buy that character. And then we have to have Venom in it. And it's not just Black Suit Spider-Man, because you know what? I actually buy the story of Black Suit Spider-Man.
Well, and even the writer was like, we really wanted to do, like, have Venom in his own movie. We just couldn't do it with the studio pressure and couldn't figure out
how to write
around that.
The studio forced it on him. And it's obvious. If you watch that movie, you can almost see the scene in that movie where it changes.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is rough.
Yeah. I will say I did enjoy the Sandman. The actor's name slips my mind at the moment, but he really did bring, you know, a little fleshing out to that character, which even in the comic books really never really got a good fleshing out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, but that's the thing, is that Spider-Man's Rogues Gallery has been so focused on animal-themed science experiments gone wrong,
yeah,
that anyone who doesn't fit that mold just gets shuffled to the wayside.
Yeah. Sandman's always kind of been that oddball character no one seems to know anyone what to do with, but he's been killed off a couple of times because of it. But anyway,
yeah.
I will say the one, I'm not going to say train wreck that of that movie, when you could tell they kind of horseshoed Venom in, but I didn't buy Topher Grace as Eddie Brock for one bloody minute.
No.
I understand the themes that they wanted to build with Eddie Brock, but it's not Eddie Brock.
No, Topher Grace, to his credit, did his best, but it just didn't work.
No.
It's one of those where he's not a bad actor by any stretch of the imagination. He just, it's one of those roles you just can't pull off, Topher. No offense, but it just doesn't work.
He pulled off the character that he was playing in that movie. But
that character wasn't Eddie Brock.
That character wasn't Eddie Brock. Not Eddie Brock from the comic books.
Yeah.
Well, not even in like there just wasn't an Eddie Brock feel. There just wasn't some kind of a character that he was trying to play. He came across as a smarmy person, which is not what Eddie Brock is.
No.
He came across as a bit of a smartass, which he is definitely not that. He's not smart in any sense of the imagination.
No, but because of that, I think Topher Grace did pull off that character, the character that was written for that role, if they would have called him Joe Schmo or, you know, whatever, I would have been fine with it and put him in the black suit, you know, after it and call him Venom. You know what? Fine.
I suppose if they just, you know, called him John What's-His-Face, I might have been a little better off with it. But you're right. When Venom shows up, I actually enjoyed the way they designed him, the way they made him look. I would have liked to see more of him, like in a separate movie.
Yes.
Because they just tried to cram everything into the end of that movie. And I'm not going to say train wreck, but it just really made you go, man, that could have been so much better if they just had another hour or so or two, or maybe another movie.
And why does New York have so many news people with foreign accents? That's what I don't know.
So, something I will say, I'm sort of sad, is that I don't think they're keeping J.K. Simmons to play J. Jonah, which is that's just a mistake.
Yeah.
They're wrong.
Yeah, if anyone ever got the casting right in the first three movies, it was J. Jonah Jameson, because it was like, if you imagined him in your head, that's what he would look like. That's how he would sound. That's perfect.
Like, he was pitch perfect, the 1960s cartoon J. Jonah Jameson.
Absolutely.
And that was the best incarnation of the Triple J.
Easily. You know what? I almost hope that we don't get to the point of Spider-Man working at the Bugle just so we can hold off on that for another movie to really let that character become more established instead of just shoehorning someone in and hoping they'll be able to not completely screw up the character.
Well, I'm looking at the cast here because I have the powerful Wikipedia in front of me, and I don't see anyone playing J. Jonah Jameson, so I'm hoping that they keep that.
Well, you know what? I'm cool with that. I would actually be better if they don't introduce, because you introduce a whole new set of story ideas when he gets to the point of working for the Bugle.
And I'm almost hoping that they take a cue from Ultimate Spider-Man, where he's not a photographer, he's like the web designer kid.
Yeah, that would be
instead.
Nice. I'm kind of hoping, in my dream fantasy world, they take the same route of the Batman Begins Dark Knight, where they really focus on a side villain. Let's face it, Scarecrow's a side villain. Lizard is a side villain. They're not the big bad. And you got a little hint of Joker at the very end of Batman Begins. Maybe you'll get a little hint of Green Goblin. Maybe you'll see Norman Osborn right at the end of this Spider-Man, so they can set up for the next one.
You know what, though? To be honest, if I don't see the Lizard on screen really damn soon, I'm going to be really pissed at Sony, because they have been teasing us with the Lizard
for two freaking movies.
For three. He was in the first one.
Was he?
Yes, he was.
It's been forever since I watched the first one.
And the same actor in all three movies. Yeah.
And
I mean, they had enough forethought to pull the continuity off to keep the same actor in all three.
It's like the Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon, where in the first episode you're introduced to five characters who could be the villain, but aren't.
Yes.
And I'm so sad that show got canceled.
Well, it got canceled so they could do the Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, and like that's the thing, is like it's Paul Dini and Bendis doing a direct adaptation of Ultimate Spider-Man. Which will have Coulson in it, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, he's going to be the high school principal.
Oh, no.
And, like, a planted S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that's managing teenage superheroes.
That's fantastic.
Like, that is the coolest thing about Ultimate Spider-Man. It's not even like, oh, it's Paul Dini, who I love, and Bendis, who actually wrote Ultimate Spider-Man. No, it's they've got Coulson in it.
Coulson seriously got the best job in S.H.I.E.L.D. Seriously. He gets to do a little bit of everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Hang out with Iron Man, keep him busy, go look at a hammer.
Well, have you seen, like,
give orders to Hawkeye.
Have you seen, like, the short films that they've packed in as featurettes for all of the Marvel movies?
I haven't seen them all. I saw the one that came with Thor where they talk about the events at the end of the Hulk. We said, who are we going to send to get the Abomination to make sure we don't get him?
Let's send Tony.
Yeah, let's send Tony. That'll be sure to piss him off. And boy, did that work like a charm. So we got to send someone to get A-Bomb and piss him off so much that they just won't give it to him.
Who could we send?
That's awesome.
I love the guy. He goes, I can play a Patsy. I'm a really good Patsy. And he goes, no, your Patsy's legendary, but we need something better. Let's send the consultant. Really? You want to go that far? Hey, we got him as a consultant for a reason, don't we? We need to send someone that's going to insult him to his core values. It'll just piss him off just looking at him. Tony Stark can do that.
We need a Coulson movie.
A Coulson movie?
No.
Agent Coulson. Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Spinoff. TV series.
There you go.
I would be completely vested in a Coulson Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series and have him just run into tangential side villains, side characters, side heroes, and just do short story arcs and just touch on all those areas of the Marvel universe that
and just make that the
support. It can't even they can't even support a couple of episodes of a cartoon. Yeah. But that I think with a solid S.H.I.E.L.D. as the story, you can easily see how all these characters could be touched on and focused on for an episode or two.
And, well, that would and even use it to tease all the other movies so we don't have to put up with it distracting us from the plot of the bigger movies.
Yep.
Because that's one thing I'm excited for in Thor 2 and Iron Man 3 is that, okay, we don't have to have the required 15 minutes of Avengers teaser time. Does that I think, drag Iron Man 2 down a bit?
I don't know about that. I kind of enjoyed the little snippets of, you know, Black Widow, little snippets of Nick Fury. It kind of, you know, a little bit of building because, let's face it, they're not going to call it, but it looks like Avengers is kind of going to be Iron Man 2.5.
Well, I think that's just because the way the trailers are spinning it, because Iron Man has been the breakout character of this little Marvel Studios initiative thing. But I think Joss has will be able to balance most of the characters.
I think Captain America pretty securely said Iron Man is not the only game in town.
Yeah.
And I dig how, even from the glimpses of you see him in the trailer, that Thor, they seem to be maintaining that same cocky, arrogant character that we saw in the movie that was... Really, it really was the perfect fit for that character.
Oh, yeah.
He is the jock of the team.
Thor, I'll say this. Thor is definitely by far the movie that exceeded my expectations by anything. I didn't think they could actually pull Thor off in a live-action format. It's like, just how are you going to do this without making it look silly? How are you going to do this without him saying, you know, thou and this and that and not my hammer?
He's still speaking a variant of Renfair English.
True, but
it's
not quite at the time.
It's ridiculous as it is in the comics.
It's more of a noble, proper English than a Shakespearean old English.
Right. And
I mean, if you're
the
gonna
other thing that I always really liked about that movie, I know I'm getting on a rant here, is the way they did Asgard. They really, referenced Jack Kirby. Drawings. They didn't use it as a, you know, absolute, you know, canon. This is what it's got to look like, but it looked like something.
But
Jack
you saw
Kirby
it, and it's like, this is Jack Kirby.
Right. This isn't exactly what he drew, but if he could do this, this would probably be what he did. If he had CG back in the day, This would probably be pretty close to what he came up with.
Asgard was amazing. Was just breathtakingly beautiful.
More Asgard for Thor 2.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'd be fine if Thor 2 was set in Asgard, period.
Yeah, the whole thing.
And more of the Warriors 3.
We don't need to go back to Arizona.
Yeah. Why were there four of them?
I don't know.
That Warriors 3 and then Sif. We're just throwing Sif on the end.
Terrible that they kept calling them the Warriors 3, but Sif was always with them. Like,
well, that was the line of that movie. Said, let me introduce ourselves. The Warriors 3 and the Lady Sif. And she and don't forget Sif. Sif's over the cutter. Hi!
I'm like, Sif.
Yeah, like it's a band. It's Sif and the Warriors 3. That would have been better. That would have actually
Sif
been
better. Sif and the Warriors 3. Okay. Live tonight at the Roadhouse. Sif and the Warriors 3. Give them a big hand, everybody. Woo!
Okay, I guess the next big thing is that we know for sure is happening is Ghost Rider 2. Ghost Rider 1 had exactly one good scene.
I love
Ghost Rider 2 will have one.
I had so much fun watching Ghost Rider because I have read so much Ghost Rider, and I had a blast. I had a blast watching Ghost Rider. It was one of those movies that I went into with no expectations because I have read so much Ghost Rider, and it's been so variable and so all over the place that for anybody to say that there is a canon to Ghost Rider is uninformed or just
insane
because there is so much variety in the story of the Ghost Rider. As much as people want to laud Marvel for its continuity and its canon, read some Ghost Rider sometime because it's pretty bad.
Marvel's canon only applies to the team up books.
Yeah.
And crisis events.
Yeah, the Ghost Rider actually was. I actually had a lot of fun with it. I didn't expect a whole lot out of it, and it had a little bit of the vibe of the Midnight Knights or Sons of Midnight Suns? Midnight Suns. It had some of the vibe of the Midnight Suns era of the mystic part of the Marvel Universe, but using Johnny Blaze and the camp of the 70s that surrounded Johnny Blaze. I mean, for God's sakes, the guy was modeled after Evel Knievel. So, yeah. Come on.
Yeah, but come on. That movie needed more Sam Elliott, as do a lot of movies.
Yeah. Any movie is better with Sam Elliott.
I don't know. I saw Ghost Rider in the theaters.
Oh, bad move.
I know.
Theaters too. I enjoyed it.
I but borrowed that from the internet.
Let's put it this way. Ghost Rider, yeah, you're a big fan of it. You didn't have a lot of expectations. I'll admit I'm never read Ghost Rider, but I always liked the character. He's a friggin' flaming skull biker. What more do you want?
Which character, though? Johnny Blaze or Danny Ketch?
Johnny Blaze, just because you said he was Evel Knievel flaming skull.
Yep.
But I don't know. I went into the movie maybe with a little bit too high expectations. Like, this is going to be good. How can you screw up a flaming skull biker fighter from hell? And then I kind of watched it. I was like, well, it wasn't bad, but it really wasn't good either. That movie fell into the category of, eh. Would I recommend it to someone? If you're a big Marvel fan, sure. If you're a casual Marvel fan, you can skip it.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't. It's not necessary by any stretch of the imagination.
But the trailer I've seen for Ghost Rider 2, let's put it this way. When I first heard they were making a Ghost Rider 2, I was like, who cares about that? And I saw the trailer, I was like, okay, you've got my attention. I'll keep my eye on this. Don't know if I'll see it in theaters, but we'll see. So they've got me from an I don't give a rat's ass about this movie to a, well, I guess I do give a rat's ass about this movie. So they're making progress.
Yeah. I guess the other thing we have to tackle is X-Men. And I'm just going to lay it out here.
Scott, I'm going to punch you in the face.
Why?
Because there is another movie that we must discuss.
Oh, what's that?
Man of Steel.
Oh, Man of Steel. Okay.
Wait for someone to say that.
Here's my thoughts on Man of Steel. It's Zack Snyder directing Kryptonian on Kryptonian violence. And as much as I'm annoyed that they're recycling a Superman villain we've already seen on screen, and that there are plenty of Superman villains we could talk about, this is going to be the best Dragon Ball Z movie ever.
I have no frame of reference for Dragon Ball Z. Again, Nolan has won my trust. And Nolan is directing this.
Well, he's producing.
Producing it. Zack Snyder is directing it. And I used to not have a very high opinion of Zack Snyder. And I still think that Zack Snyder tends to use licensed material as a crutch. But he's done it pretty well. 300, the Dawn of the Dead remake, Watchmen, the Owls of Ga'Hoole. He knows his stuff when it comes to taking a licensed property, somebody else's baby, and putting it on film. He does that well.
He's a translator, not an adapter, and that's a good skill to have.
I'm okay with that, because I want to see a Superman movie that he didn't write, because I don't want Zack Snyder to write the movie.
No,
but I want to see him translate somebody's really freaking awesome story.
I
make no bones about the fact that I am a huge Superman fan. My dog's name is Kal-El.
Not Crypto?
Not Crypto, because that would be weird.
Well, but Kal-El's not. Okay.
No. Kal, yeah, I mean, he's Cal. My dog's name is Cal, and it's Kal-El. But I want to see this movie. And the things I predict from it are mostly slow motion Superman punching the shit out of things.
Everybody.
And that's, you know what? That's fine.
Just slow motion, period.
Yeah.
That's the thing when I heard Zack Snyder was doing Superman, I was like, what can Superman do in slow motion?
And
oh, dear God.
A really awesome soundtrack.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Zack Snyder remixing that classic Superman theme should be interesting. But
I am already in.
Yeah. We were talking about good casting earlier. There are just line after line of good casting in this movie.
Yes.
Lawrence Fishburne as Perry White. Yes.
Brilliant.
Kevin Costner as Jonathan Kent.
In.
Yes. Oh, God, I forgot his name all of a sudden. Blankety blank as Jor-El.
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe, thank you. Yes. And you know, even some of the odd characters, Lois Lane.
Oh, no, Amy Adams can definitely pull off Lois Lane.
Amy Adams, that's it, yes.
You know, I was concerned about Amy Adams as Lois Lane until I saw Fighter.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, you know what?
That'll work.
I'm in.
Yeah. Even the guy they got playing Superman himself, I just kind of look at him and go, yeah, that looks like Superman. The last Superman, I was like, no.
Are you kidding me? Brandon Routh, there were times on screen where Brandon Routh looked just like Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
That's because they put him in the right, you know, poses.
Well,
right
were shooting
final
him
scene
to
where he's
look
flying
like Christopher
over the,
Reeve.
The planet down below, that's Christopher Reeve's scene.
Well, yeah.
You put anyone in that outfit wearing with the black hair and the little curl on top, it's Christopher Reeve, it's Superman.
I can't agree with that. But.
Okay, not anyone, but almost anyone. But I didn't care for the last Superman. I didn't think he did a very good job.
I will defend that film on many levels. Things that
the only thing good about the last film was Kevin Spacey as Lex Luthor was sheer genius.
I think he was underutilized. I agree. I think Kevin Spacey's performance of Lex Luthor was actually all wrong.
Really?
I thought he was trying too hard to play the campier version of it that Gene Hackman did.
He was basically pre-Crisis Lex Luthor, when Post Crisis is much more interesting a character.
Yes, yes. He should have been. He should have been far more Kaiser Soze than he was the goofball that he was.
I don't know. I don't think it was that much of a goofball. That one scene where he's on the that little island, and he just goes all nuts on Superman for, "Do you put me in jail?" And he's like, "There you go. That's Lex Luthor. That's the mean, nasty, evil SOB from the comic books. There we go."
Now, see, I like my Lex Luthor a whole lot more calculating. And I just didn't...
Like, Lex Luthor, even post-crisis, has his hot moments, but they're very limited, and he usually has, you know, mercy to show up and rein him in.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Like, as much as he flips his desk and goes, "Double the Superman killing budget," you know, he's still he's a schemer.
Yes. Yeah. That was actually, I thought, one of the weaker points. Now, I love Kevin Spacey as an actor, and I think he could have pulled off a different portrayal of Lex Luthor. I just wasn't crazy about the Lex Luthor that they were trying to put on the screen.
Yeah. But yes, I think Man of Steel will be awesome.
Now, I'm going to go ahead and toss this out there, and I've mentioned it before on Backseat Producers, and I haven't heard anything more about it, and I don't know if that's because this rumor was squelched or if it was because somebody just made up the rumor. But there's a rumor going around that there is a film being secretly produced in the Warner Brothers studios, and that film is Batman Superman.
And I know you've discussed this on Backseat Producers, yeah, and I think I disagree with you on a couple of points of it.
Well, now, I'm going to preface this all by saying this is all rumor to this point.
Like, this is all crazy Candyland stuff, guys.
Yeah, I mean, and it is, and the first biggest point of the rumor that makes me say, I don't think so, is that Christian Bale and Henry Cavill are going to be Superman and Batman in these films.
I'll buy Cavill, but I don't think Bale.
I don't think Bale will be back. No. I honestly do not think Bale will be back. We just did The Machinist, and in the not too recent past, I've seen The Fighter, and I just can't see Bale, unless he's under some secret contract where they have like one of his kids captive. I can't imagine that someone of his acting, and it's not even talent,
because
his acting mania,
yeah,
would agree to make another movie, and for it to be a movie of the style and the type of movie that a Batman Superman combined movie would be.
Yeah.
That and the plot is supposedly this is a young Batman or Superman who is just starting out, and Batman or Superman is training or and mentoring Batman or Superman.
Yeah.
And it's literally that wishy-washy.
Yeah. It's like, that said, I think at this point the way they've portrayed Batman in the three movies as a very young individual in a very realistic setting, it has to be Superman mentoring Batman if they are going to build a broader continuity. Because who better to introduce Batman to a complex world of time travel and hyper-intelligent apes than Superman?
Well, and see, the way they've portrayed it, and it would turn continuity on its ear, would be for Batman, a more seasoned Batman, to approach a young Superman. The problem with that is Superman in pretty much every version of continuity, in every Elseworlds, in every version of Earth that they have, is, with the exception of, okay, then we have to talk about the lead, Justice Society. But aside from them, Superman is the first hero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you have to make, it's like a rule. Like, if you're going to write for DC, you've got to sign a contract in blood that Superman has to be acknowledged as the first hero.
Yeah.
Which, I'm a Superman fan, so I'm actually kind of cool with that.
But, well, you know what? As much as I'm like, as much as I'm not the biggest Superman fan, I have to doff my cap to him as being like, no, he's an icon, he's an image, he's the first.
Yeah.
But Superman is, you say superhero, what's the first thing you think of? Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't have much faith in this rumor of the Superman-Batman movie. I've heard of it, but I was like, I just don't see. I would very much expect something to happen along the Batman line, that they do another reboot as soon as this next movie's over, just because they've made such a super realistic world in this one. It's not a superhero movie. If they're going to build a DC universe, same way they've built a Marvel, you know, movie universe, they need a Batman universe where they can have...
That actually fits.
Right, they can have... You know,
Clayface does not fit in the Nolanverse.
Right, no. So you can have a Clayface, you can have a Zatanna, you can have all these characters that just don't fit into this universe that Nolan's created. You can't put certain characters in there.
Yeah, you need to get Batman sci-fi characters into this. Yeah,
You're not putting Solomon Grundy in Nolanverse. It ain't going to work.
The only character that I would love to see Nolan's take on, just because the character has always been so compelling to me, was Man-Bat.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really great stories from the early 90s. And the character they really had for him in the early 90s, man, I would love to see that. It's a little bit too sci-fi.
Nolan.
I would love to see Nolan just kind of do a one shot. Okay, this is not really canon.
Like, I almost want Nolan to get tempted to write comics.
Yes.
Just to like keep his little verse going and do his interpretations of the entire Batman villain canon.
Yeah.
All right. You guys done building your altar to Nolan yet?
Nolan's cool, but okay. No. getting back to my cards on the table about the X-Men franchise This is what I want. This is what I want. Is I want them to build a smaller version of the Marvel Cinematic Universe out of X-Men characters.
Well, the problem is they don't own the movie rights. That's the biggest problem they have.
Well, yeah, they have to have something in production basically continuously. And I think that might almost help them, because then they can have... Like, every X-Men movie since the first one has had this problem of too many characters and one subplot too many for its own good. And they could shuffle these into smaller X-Men teams. Like, I'd love to see X-Force.
I'm going to disagree with you here on that, though, Scott, because I think the first two X-Men movies were pitch perfect for what you could do with an X-Men movie. And then... Getting back to First Class, they showed that you could have a large cast and give every character some time, but not bloat a film with way too many characters.
Darwin didn't get any time.
I really think they told the story they wanted to tell in First Class.
Yeah, they told that story, but did they need Banshee there to do it?
What about poor Darwin?
Poor Darwin.
Didn't get any screen time. Barely even got to see him. And the black dude still dies first. The black mutant dies first, for pizza.
Welcome to the X-Men.
Yeah.
But, no. In terms of X-Men, I agree with you. The first two, especially two. Two was by far my favorite X-Men movie. They really got the pitch right with two. You're always going to have a whole big cast of characters because it's an X-Men franchise. There is no... In one certain X-Men, even if Wolverine gets most of the screen time, it's still an X-Men movie, it's not a Wolverine movie. Even in Wolverine, there were lots of different characters. But when we got to 3, and then when we got to Wolverine, things just got off track. Okay, they got really off track. There was actually a good, strong story that you could build all the characters around in 1 and 2. In 3... I'm not sure anyone knew where that story was going, actors or otherwise.
Well, I think Brett Ratner wanted to make an homage to Chris Claremont's X-Men books.
Which is a problem, because Chris Claremont's run was really reliant on the serialized medium just to have 12 plot threads going at any given time.
You're right.
You can't do that in a movie.
You are correct. And that, you know what? as much as the TV show Heroes has been lambasted, that was my chance to see Chris Claremont's X-Men on screen.
With a heavy dash of the Watchmen in there.
There was some of that, but
at least for season one.
With season one, yes. But once you got into seasons 2, 3, 4, within the first two episodes of each season, I turned around to my wife and said, I can tell you exactly what is going to happen for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Because these are X-Men storylines. Mm-hmm. They absolutely, and you can't tell me they didn't pull from X-Men storylines. Oh, hey, this carnival, this is the Morlocks.
Yeah, those were Morlocks.
That was totally the Morlocks.
And this is what I want to see from the X-Men franchise, is that they start spinning it off into the other X-Men teams. Like, we don't need to have Professor X and the core cast. We can have an X-Force movie. We can have New Mutants. We can have Excalibur. We can have the Morlocks.
I would
get
love
their own
to see
movies.
I think you're
getting a little pie in the sky there, Scott. I don't think that it'd be
okay,
cool.
Okay, maybe
happens,
not
in
Morlocks or Excalibur, but you know X-Force, especially the new X-Force.
No. I got this one for you. New Mutants, CW TV series.
Oh, yeah, no. Seriously. The New Mutants were a CW TV series.
No, I'm not even joking, and I'm not even saying that facetiously, because I think it could work.
Yeah.
I honestly.
Aside from the budget.
Shall we go very old school? I remember a made-for-TV movie from Fox. I can almost remember the it was kind of like the test beds. Like, can we do this, and people will watch it? It was, I don't remember the name of it, but it was, it had Jubilee in it.
Yeah.
It was a made-for-TV movie. And it was, I could almost see that as the test bed. They put it out there and see if people watched it, and people did. So they said, okay, make the X-Men movie. And that was the kickoff. When that X-Men movie was a big success, they're like, wait a minute. That was a big success. There's all sorts of comic book characters we can make movies out of. Let's roll!
To be fair, they had been talking about X-Men movies since about 82 or 83. Yeah. They could just never find a studio that would fund it and support it with enough weight behind it and to get the kind of casting they wanted for it.
Well, and the same was true of the Spider-Man movies, where those were just in some form of hell forever.
Yeah, yeah, but I know at one point the plan for the X-Men movies was that it was a multi-part plan, and the first movie was going to be the Wolverine movie, because to be fair, one of the most popular characters in Marvel Universe, even through the 80s and 90s, and they were going to have a Wolverine movie. And the last scene of the Wolverine movie was going to be Professor X coming to him and saying, I need to talk to you. I've got a proposition for you.
And then he says, fuck off, like first class.
That was brilliant.
That was the best thing ever about first class.
But the idea was that would kick off the X-Men movie. So you have this character that everybody wants to see his background and his origin, and you just cut through all that bullshit.
Yeah.
And now you can talk about an X-Men movie. And you've already got all the weight of getting an introduction to Professor X and Wolverine out of the way. And you could even have one or two of the X-Men show up with Professor X.
Yeah, just hanging out.
Yeah. And then just bust straight into New Genesis.
Actually, you know what? If they did a Days of Future Past movie.
They did already, though.
I know.
X-Men 3.
No, but a real Days of Future Past with the time travel and Bishop and everything.
Oh, not Bishop. No, no, not Bishop.
Bishop, as long as we don't have that wavy hair. We don't need the wavy hair.
But yeah, that's basically what I want from X-Men, is that and the Deadpool movie to get made and not suck.
I don't care about the Deadpool movie. What I want to see is Bryan Singer just like put his cock on the table and say, I am going to make X-Men 3. Period.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that I think
then go back and make X-Men 3 the way it was supposed to be made. Give us the Dark Phoenix saga. Give us his reimagined version of the Dark Phoenix saga that was supposed to happen in X-Men 3. That was teased to us in X-Men 2.
And what the hell was up with First Class not having a teaser at the end of the movie?
It stands alone.
Yeah. Except now that Sony kind of wants to do a follow-up to that, like X-Men Varsity Years or something.
You know what? I think they made a mistake in the way they ended X-Men First Class. I think they wrapped things up too quickly at the end of X-Men First Class, and they could have easily gotten a whole nother movie to give us that bridge between X-Men First Class and X-Men 1.
Yeah.
There was enough story there and enough things that they just shoehorned in.
That last 20 minutes was really loaded.
That last 10 minutes, five minutes was really loaded.
No.
But yeah, I really dug First Class. I thought they did a great job with that.
If they keep
the cast together for the next movie, I'll just be happy with that, Ian.
Sure.
Now, you want a movie that really exceeded my expectations. I didn't see First Class in theaters just because I didn't think it was going to work. I really mean, it's like, nah, I just don't see this as working. I don't see the characters the way they're playing. You really going to have Kevin Bacon as Sebastian Shaw? Really? Okay, I'm not buying this. But friends told me, no, you got to see this. You got to see this. You absolutely have to see this. So I bought it on DVD when it came out, and I was like, boy, I was wrong there. Kevin Bacon as Sebastian Shaw worked amazingly well.
Yeah.
Professor X, Magneto, perfect. The only minor gripe I have with that was they put in Havoc instead of Scott Summers, but I'm willing to let that slide.
Yeah, but to be honest, Scott's a dick.
Scott's a dick. Yeah, but...
Am I the only Scott Summers fan out there? Come on.
Yes, you are. Dude, you think Gundam Seed Destiny isn't terrible. Of course you're the only Scott Summers fan.
Ah, that's harsh.
Yeah. Okay.
Defender of Cyclops.
Okay. Other big things coming up or things we'd like to see?
I'd love to see a Doctor Strange movie.
Oh, they've got the ball rolling on that now, finally.
They've had the ball rolling on it for about 15 years.
Yeah, but the ball's rolling faster now. Yeah. Like I'm looking forward to Edgar Wright's Ant-Man movie just because I don't think Edgar Wright can do anything wrong. Except maybe pick a marketing team.
I know it has no chance of happening, but Iron Fist, Luke Cage, Heroes for Hire movie, please. Ooh. No chance, I know, but still be fun.
That's actually how street level that character is. That show could almost exist as a television series.
Yeah. Speaking of other Candyland things, someone needs to make Supermax, aka the Green Arrow in prison movie, an actual movie. I know the script got leaked, but it still needs to be made.
I think we are neglecting to mention one thing that DC has been doing very, very right recently, and that's its animated films.
Well, that's going to be a whole other episode down the line.
Yeah,
just to tease you guys.
I'll help with the teaser a little bit. As right as Marvel has been doing live action films, and DC has been. With the exception of its non-superhero movies, which I don't consider Batman Begins and Dark Knight superhero movies, because they're not really comic book movies.
No.
The Green Lantern, I think, stumbled by comparison to what Marvel has done. I think their animated features have been just far and away better than a lot and most of Marvel's animated features.
I
know you're going to do an extra episode today.
You know what? DC's animated whole entire animated department has been on the right track since they picked Paul Dini to make a little show called Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah. I'm completely with you. One of the best Batman movies ever produced to this day.
Yeah.
Is Mask of the Phantasm.
Phantasm.
Sub-Zero was still awesome, even.
Yeah. That was
Batman's had a lot of good movies.
Yes, he has.
And a lot of great animated movies. Return of the Joker, Batman Beyond.
Great movie.
Under the Red Hood just continues this string of really phenomenal movies.
I just picked up today. I picked up Batman Year One. I watched it earlier this afternoon. Stood up and applauded at the end. It was genius.
I want to see it.
Do you know what the next Batman animated movie is? You want to know? Dark Knight Returns.
I thought they were doing Doom Patrol. Not Doom Patrol. Legion of Doom next.
Well, they're doing Justice League Doom and Superman versus the Elite, but the Q4 2012 is Dark Knight Returns.
That ought to be interesting.
Probably one of my... I am most torn about that story.
Yeah. Well,
I love the take on an old Batman, but Frank Miller can't write for shit. And his portrayal of Superman is completely wrong in every context of Superman, ever. It is just not Superman.
Like, Frank Miller has his moments, but he's just also completely insane.
Who's that?
Hmm?
What's that?
Oh, Frank Miller's just insane.
Like, Frank Miller is crazy, yes.
Yeah.
I'm still looking forward to Sin City 2, though, if that ever actually happens.
I own Sin City.
Huh?
I own Sin City. I like some of his stuff, but the man cannot write. He really can't. He is the George Lucas of comic books.
Well, here's the thing is that at some point he could write.
I don't know. Frank Miller.
With editorial supervision.
It's just that he needs people to rein him in.
Yeah.
I think you just said something is accurate. Frank Miller is George Lucas. If you leave them to their own devices, they'll just start wandering off into oblivion.
Yep.
They need someone standing by their side going, no, stay on track. No, come back. They just need someone to focus them in the right area. But if you leave them to their own devices, they start ending up in oblivion.
Yes. Yeah. I'm completely with you. I agree 100%.
It's just that Frank Miller got protection from editors somewhere along the line.
He was able to tell editors to F off.
Yeah. And that's
what happened to George Lucas. I'm going to direct the damn movie, damn it.
Yeah. I wrote Wolverine number 1 through 4. Well, Claremont did, but I did.
Yeah.
No, you didn't. Shut up.
I actually do like, I still do love his run of Daredevil.
His run of Daredevil's great. That was early on, and he was under the reins.
Yeah. Well, and this is the thing, is that Frank Miller realized that there was a lot to be exploited in mashing superhero tropes with film noir tropes.
Mm.
And he started that on Daredevil. I just don't know where he went wrong.
Daredevil's the kind of story that if you're gonna mash superhero and noir, Daredevil is a good place to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's already almost a noir comic in and of itself. You can just push it that little extra mile.
Sure.
There's another movie. Maybe I'm the only one who liked it. I liked that Ben Affleck Daredevil movie. I thought it was fun.
Well, the director's cut just improved it so much, and I'm sort of sad that they're rebooting Daredevil.
Mm. Yeah, I would have liked to have seen a Daredevil too. I would have liked to have seen where they went with that. The Elektra movie, God, that was a... oh, God, that was bad. But
that was bad.
I mean, just bad. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, which one is worse, Ghost Rider or Elektra? Elektra. Not even close. Not even in the conversation.
I'm with you there.
Yeah. Elektra should have stayed dead.
Yeah.
And that same music thing is, if you ever read Frank Miller interviews, to this day, he will make a point of mentioning that Elektra's still dead.
Yeah.
As far as he's concerned, Elektra's dead.
Yeah, that one running around Marvel, still a Skrull. Still a Skrull, damn it.
Okay. I think we've hit 2 hours or so.
I've been recording for an hour 40.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
We probably started about 5 or 10.
And the worst part is most of this wasn't actual just rambling nonsense. We were all actually on point most of the time. We just talked a lot.
Yeah. But that said, I think we will come back to this just to talk about sort of the second string publisher comics coming up, and also foreign comic adaptations, because I do want to riff on Tintin and the upcoming anime-based movies.
Oh, yes. The Akira. Did you hear the news about Akira? It's happening.
Again?
You know, it's been greenlit by Warner Brothers, and they already have their lead actor. It's the, I forget his name, but he was the lead actor in Tron Legacy.
Yeah, that guy. Which is still a billion times better than the other guys they had picked for him going up to this.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. I think he'll do a good job, but I just don't know if they can pull this off.
There's no way you can sell Akira to a mainstream audience.
Right. The Akira, if you just watch Akira and try and, you know, you gotta, Akira's one of those movies you gotta watch a couple of times to figure out what the hell is going on. You can't sell that as a comic book movie.
I can
what
just
they're
see
going to try and do.
I can just see the end of the trailer. Whatever the trailer's going to be, is there's going to be some scene, and then it's going to fade to black, and then you'll hear, Ketsuo!
Kaneva!
And you see the big fleshy baby monster thing.
Yeah,
No. Just leave it black.
Just black, and it, Ketsuo! Kaneva!
Yeah.
Except I think based on the script, Tetsuo will be like Tony.
Yeah, they're changing the names. They're changing it from Neo Tokyo to Neo New York, and they're changing Tetsuo and Kanada to Johnny and Tony.
No. I think it's like this weird thing where they've sort of adopted 80s cyberpunk where it's half Japanese anyhow. So it's going to be Tony and Kaneda. Or the other way around. Like Kenny and, I don't know,
Tetsuo.
I heard they were just changing everyone's name. It's like, the only thing they're going to keep from the movie is the bikes.
Oh, that motorcycle scene is still perfect.
Although that does mean we get to see a live, real, working motorcycle from Akira.
No, they already made that for Kanye West.
Oh, that's true. He has one, yeah.
And then the guys from the Brilliant Green, that Japanese rock band, also made their own Akira motorcycle.
Wow.
They used it in a music video that was a tie-in to a Gundam end theme. So, you've got the Akira motorcycle and Haro bouncing around for no reason.
That's a mashup.
That's a mashup for you.
Yeah, I like it. I want a Akira motorcycle just so I can slap a Haro sticker on there. Really confuse people.
A while back, they did auction off Kanye West's Akira motorcycle.
If I win the lotto, I'm getting one.
Okay.
If I win the lotto, I'm getting that, and I'm getting that Back to the Future DeLorean I saw on the Discovery Channel a couple weeks back.
Well, there's this company that's sort of Toronto-based that makes a non-licensed Akira, like the Kaneda biker jacket with the pill on the back.
Yeah.
Now, you know that they are making DeLoreans again.
Yep. Out of old parts.
electric DeLoreans.
Oh, that's not fun. Then they don't make the noise. What's the point of the giant exhaust things if there's no exhaust?
Yeah, I was talking to Jonathan Holmberg from Way of the Game, and he was mentioning that in Forza 4 that they have a DeLorean as one of the playable cars. And he said he got it for the sole purpose of getting it up to 88 miles an hour, just to see if flames if his tire tracks would turn into flames. And he would,
Forza 4 has so much car fan service. Like, they've got the Top Gear test track, and you can get the Kia C'D to drive around it with.
Yeah, so he tried it out, and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
But he said when you hit 88 miles an hour with the DeLorean, it does unlock for you a background that shows, I think he said that it shows the DeLorean with the out of time license plate and flames, so for your avatar to stand in that scene.
Yeah.
No, see, you need a car display scene that's the Twin Pine / Lone Pine Mall.
Well, that's what I told him. I said what they need is a track that the first time you go around the track, it's the Twin Pine Mall, and the second time you go around, it's the Lone Pine Mall.
Now, this guy on Discovery Channel, he took an old school DeLorean, he psyched it up. He put in all the wires. He put in the flux capacitor. He put in everything. And the coolest thing about it is you get into the DeLorean. Once you go 88 miles an hour, neon lights up. The flux capacitor speeds up. The only thing that doesn't happen is flames come out the back.
Well, that and obviously the stereo needs to just interrupt whatever is actually going on to play. Da, 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 da.
Either that or Huey Lewis, one of the two.
One of the two. Maybe it just alternates.
It's random. That's why it's exciting every time you don't know.
But yes, all right. I think I've teased you, I think, to close out. We did tease you with another comic book movie episode focused on, like, Dark Horse and other small press guys and foreign comics. And I'm just going to say, there will be a Back to the Future episode at some point soon.
Yes. Well, and we get an animated comic book or animated DC episode.
Oh, yeah. I need to watch a few more because I have not.
I watch Batman Year One. You can pretty much ignore the fact that Batman's in it. They should basically call it Jim Gordon Year One, but still good.
I would be fine with that. I would be fine with a Jim Gordon television series.
Well, the thing is they did a comic book series about Gotham PD, and I'm like, Jim Gordon was not the lead in it. It's like, that's where you screwed up.
That is pretty screwed up. I would love to see a Jim Gordon series where, like, he starts off either, like, first season, he's at the Academy or just getting out of the Academy, and he's like
the pilot is him at the Academy, and, like, it ends with him graduating.
Yes, that perfect. And then, like, the whole thing is him working his way up in the ranks over the course of, like, 7 or 8 seasons, and, you know, him going from just being, like, a beat cop and having to deal with the corruption of the Gotham PD and
the occasional wackiness of, like, Deadshot or Calendar Man doing something nuts.
No. Have this all be before any of that happens.
No. Like, you can get some C-list Batman villains in there.
Yeah, maybe. Or what you do is have him bust people that we only know them as their real names.
Yeah. But if you're a comic book geek, you know, it's like, oh, that guy's actually...
Or he's going to become, you know, one of these future villains.
Yeah, he busts a guy named Zaz. Ooh, look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like the last season when they're really struggling to keep the show on the air, that's when we start introducing the rumors of the Bat.
There's just this guy.
He's
this Bat.
They keep finding
guys strung up off of gargoyles.
And then the series finale, the last thing you see is Jim Gordon investigating something and the shadow of Batman over him. You don't ever see Batman. You just see shadow over him.
No, the last scene is that one scene from Batman Begins with the stapler, and he's like, you're honest.
All right.
But until next time, laters.
I love the stapler.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
They Smell Bad on the Outside is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike License version 3.0 International. Check our website at sbopodcast.blogspot.com for contact information.